helping realtors on Vancouver Island stay connected, current, and on the cutting edge. This is the Vancouver Island Real Estate Show. Here's your host, Braden Wheatcroft.
Good morning, everybody. This is the Vancouver Island Real Estate Show. I'm your host, Braden Wheatcroft. I'm coming to you live on Facebook from Nanaimo. In fact, I am actually standing in the office of Adam Hauerluck, one of my good buddies and mortgage brokers. He's been kind enough to lend me one of his offices today so I could do this live stream uninterrupted. We've got a great show for you today. We are talking with team leader, realtor extraordinaire, Mr. Tony Joe, based out of Victoria. Tony is going to be actually joining us for a second time on the show, which is a pretty exclusive club at this point. He's one of the very few people who's been on the show twice.
Ian Thompson, right?
Yeah, Tony and Ian Thompson, and both of those guys, they just don't have a lot going on, so it was an easy for them to say yes. But hey, before I bring Tony on here, I want to just give you a few talking points about Tony if you don't actually know him. Tony's been actually licensed in the Victoria market since 1991, 3 years after I'm born, but that's a topic for another day. He is the team leader of the prime real estate team at RE/MAX Camosa in Oak Bay. He's a business coach with Richard Robbins International. He's a BCRE instructor, focuses a lot on the applied practices course, as well as teaching buyer's agency. And he's actually been teaching buyer's agency before it was cool, before it became a part of most of our business practices post June 15th. He's been talking about it for years. And lastly, he's held numerous roles at the Victoria Real Estate Board, including being the president in 2008. So I'm really excited to bring Tony on here. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Tony Joe. Tony, man, how are you?
I'm doing great, Braden. It's
good. How's that for an intro?
That is fantastic. I love it.
Your wife sent me that over. She said, make sure you hit all these talking points, okay?
Well, so you cut out all the bad stuff then.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I should get your kids to write your bio and see if how you know,
you know
if it's any different.
Would, Thomas would. That would be interesting. An 8-year-old intro,
Yeah. Well, Tony, I really appreciate you coming on today. As I say, second timers club, congratulations. You know, in SNL, when you host the show 5 times, you get a jacket. I might have to look into starting to invest in something like that.
Get on that.
Yeah. Now, we were talking just before we hit live about your recent experience. As I mentioned in your introduction, you've actually been part of the applied practices course as an instructor for a number of years now, I believe. And you're now having your first taste of post June 15th applied practice course. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, actually, it's funny because so right now I'm doing a applied practice course with Jennifer Lynch. And for most people know that nowadays, after you write your exam, you do 2 weeks online. It's a moderated conversation with a couple of instructors. And then you do 2 days in class and then 3.5 months of practice with your managing broker. But before we talk about that, I also taught a class in Nanaimo. I think it ended on June the 11th or something. So a whole bunch of poor students, there was 30 of them, they were wondering, they're like, why are you teaching us the old way when it's going to change 4 days after we get our learner's licenses? And the answer to that, by the way, is because, of course, it hadn't changed over yet. June 15th was the hard changeover date, right? But the other part, too, as we all know, is none of us knew with any level of clarity what the playing field was going to be until June 15th. So fast forward, here we are a month later. I am right now doing a course. I'm on day 2 of a moderated course with a whole bunch of learners. And it's very interesting because, they've all just written. They have not applied any sort of real estate practice so far. And there are questions about what happens when I meet somebody at an open house and they want to buy my listing. Of course, we know that's changed now, right? But it's still there's still a lot of the consumers. It's a reminder to me that the consumers are most definitely a couple of steps behind us as far as the new agency rules are concerned. Because these new learners, they are consumers until they get their license, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to talk to you about some of those specific scenarios if we can. But just to set the tone for today again. So we are here to get your perspective as a team leader. You know, the last few weeks I've had Darren German, who's a successful individual agent. He did a survey of other top producing individual agents talking about.
It was Darren and his mom, right?
It was, yeah, Darren and his mom. Yeah. And then the next week we had Mr. Corey Raven, Remax broker owner, talking about, you know, what are his 270 agents saying to him? Your perspective as a team leader. Now, you've been very active and vocal about these changes as the year leading up to them. You've done all sorts of content, internal video content specifically for realtors. I've seen some external content that you've done for the public. I'm just curious, let's set the tone here. What is your perspective on these changes as you know them today?
Okay. They're good for consumers. It's all about consumer protection. It's all about transparency. It's all about disclosure. I feel that if council has achieved their objective of having consumers fully advised. Now, I do feel that maybe some things are overkill. A little about the whole disclosure of expected remuneration with counter offers and multiple offers, which we have dealt with a lot in the past month. From a standpoint, I believe that it's been a good thing as well, too. I know it's hard for many people to sort of feel this way. But the thing is, I for one, and the team, we talked about this just yesterday, we are able to have much more deep and meaningful conversations with people before we start working with them that I feel elevates the perception of professionalism in the eyes of the mm-hmm. consumer. So all in all, I think it's good. There's been some growing pains, but it's a good thing.
Well, that's exactly what we want to focus on today is the positivity, but also some of the growing pains, because we know with changes, there's always going to be some challenges, some things we didn't think of. So I'm just curious, you've been operating your team now for, I guess it's about 40, 45 days since the new rules. What have you noticed? What has caught you by surprise? What has been exactly what you thought it was going to be? Like, what's your commentary on the last 40 days?
Well, so the interesting thing, I'll give you an example. I had a phone call on Saturday from a consumer who wanted to have a look at one of our listings. Said, hey, we're used to this. You get somebody that calls up and said, I'm driving around the neighborhood. I have to see your house this afternoon. You got to love those ones, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, I called this gentleman back. It's a vacant house. I had dialogue that I used to use about 10 years ago that my team hated. And I'll tell you what the dialogue is right now, right? He called up and he said, I need to see the house. And I said, well, the house is available. Do you have everything you need to know about it? Yes. Well, it's vacant. So it could actually be shown at any time. But you know what? Not only is our entire team busy, but we can't sell you the house anyways. So I'm guessing that you're out looking at other houses today, right? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, just grab one of those other agents and get them to show him the house. Which, by the way, he did. He told me that he was looking at another house at 3 o'clock with Susie. And I said, get her to call me. She's a friend of mine. She did. And actually, right now, I think they're talking about preparing an offer. So, I did what I had to do as far as the new rules are concerned. I did not go deep at all into the person's personal situation. I clarified with them the fact that I could not serve them in a dual agency capacity. He understood, by the way, because he's a consumer. He's in the market. He's probably bumped into this before. But the other thing is, so Susie, of course, who I've known for years, she is so happy that I delivered to her somebody who she's going to sell. I can't help but think that it's going to come back to us when that happens again, right? In reverse.
And just interesting, so you talked about this being a dialogue that you had in your toolkit. How many years ago? Was it 10 years ago?
Yeah, and you know what happened is Angie, on my team, Angie's who are buyer agent, she's our buyer.
Yeah.
She hated when I said that because she's like, you're wasting a good lead. Like, that could be a buyer for us. And of course, that you know, yeah. Sure, but we would have to get past the fact that they didn't like our listing that they called on first, yeah. Right?
And I just want to ask you about that a little bit more detail, because sometimes like some one of the things I struggle with at times is going, okay, where is the line between following the rules, but then, of course, acting in our seller's best interest, which is to get the outcome they want selling the house. So in the scenario where the buyer calls in on the listing, they want to see your seller's property. I mean, how do you rationalize that in terms of saying, I'm sorry, I can't actually show it to you? Like, that is not a disadvantage for your seller in your standpoint?
So just to clarify, I didn't say I could not show it to them. I said okay. That we're all busy.
Right.
And I said I couldn't sell it to you anyways.
Ah, okay. That's right. Key.
So that is the difference because, you know, even if we went and showed them the house and they decide to like it, I'm going to have to end up passing them to somebody else anyways. So let's just cut that out and go straight to that. And honestly, from a licensee standpoint, we were busy, right? I always get my back up when a non-client calls up and says, I need to see the house in an hour. Well, you know what? You're not a client. Yeah. I haven't gone through a qualification process with you. I have told many agents before, don't be a Pop-Tart agent, right?
Yeah.
And I have not been for years. It gives my life balance, I'm happy to say. But at the end of the day, it's funny because the new council rules kind of help us get there, believe it or not.
Yeah, it certainly does. And to your earlier point, talking about the consumers bumping into this a little bit more, I'm actually really surprised at how many stories I'm hearing from consumers, buyers and sellers, at how quickly they are getting up to speed. I mean, we've had, what is it, 5 weekends now worth of open house opportunities where they're walking through realtors' open houses right across the province. And they're, for the most part, from what I'm hearing, having a conversation with agents about agency and how it works really early in the process. So it might not take 6 months for the buying population to really get on board. It might only take, you know, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Now, Tony, one thing, I'm just getting some feedback here from our audience that our video feed is very pixelated. I just want to apologize. I'm having some Wi-Fi issues on my end. So just bear with us. We're definitely going to kind of work through this as we go. I haven't dropped a feed yet, so knock on wood, today won't be the day. And I've had to pixelate Tony's image because he's just too good looking, and I don't think we could handle it if it was fully, you know, in 4K. Is that right, Tony?
You know, next time you got to do this in cartoon. Is there an app that turns this into cartoon?
Yeah, well, apparently we're halfway there right now. We've got a question here from one of the Remax of Nanaimo agents, Evan. He asked, Tony, how is your team handling online leads, which might start blurring sensitive personal information on the telephone? So adding more context to that, I know it's one of those challenges of implied agency is if the buyer starts telling us all their, you know, deepest, darkest secrets, we run the risk of getting into that implied agency, whether we want to or not. How are you approaching that right now?
Okay, because I do online lead generation. This is an area that is definitely a work in progress right now. So we don't have this nailed down yet. The instruction and the policy that my team have is, well, first of all, because most people are signing up and setting up their own searches online, right? Which to my understanding is fine, because if the system is providing information and we're not getting into personal details about that consumer, we haven't crossed the line yet. The objective always is to set up a face-to-face appointment is the number one idea. We have had a number of cases in the last 40 some odd days where we have converted that person who went online into a meeting. And it's at that meeting that I think both of them have done it. Kyle, for sure, has, of course, started the meeting off with the disclosure of representation and trading services before a conversation even happened. So we're doing our best to make sure that we are compliant in that matter. But as far as automation is concerned, so we just completed our 4 videos. So we filmed 4 videos. They're less than a minute each. And it's part of our drip campaign. So what happens when somebody signs up to our online lead website? The first thing that goes out is an email where I explain the changes in agency, along with a link to the council website and a image of the disclosure, representation, and trading services form. So it starts with that. The second one that we have is the, we've got 4. We do the risk of unrepresented buyers. We do, we talk about dual agency and how that's no longer available. And Sue just did hers yesterday, which is the advantages of buyer agency. So we're very excited about this, actually. They're short little snippets, but we're creating templates so that they go up automatically with anyone who signs up. We want to be compliant. By saying that we sent it, right?
Yeah, compliant and professional by the sounds of it. I've got another question I want to come back to you about team structure, but seeing how we're already on this vein, I want to talk about some common scenarios we find ourselves in as marketers. So, you know, you've sounds like you've created this drip campaign. Just to clarify, so that's if any stranger, you know, Joe Blow at MickeyMouse@gmail.com signs up for a search on your website, they're going to get this drip campaign of videos.
Yes.
Right. And so from your perspective, no lines are being crossed at that point because they've basically signed up themselves, even though you're sending them listings, that's not the same as you giving them advice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the other thing is we have Afraz, our ISA, he does follow up with people. But following up with the dialogue of, thanks for signing up on our website. Just wanted to make sure you got everything you needed. Let us know if there's anything else you need.
Right. And the Real Estate Council published a long time ago, a really great document on the website that shows what a licensed assistant and an unlicensed assistant are allowed to do. And it's very, very black and white. In fact, Corey Raven last week in our conversation alluded to, it'd be nice if council eventually produces something for agency in these new rules that makes it just as clear, because it is a great, great document. I want to ask you about marketing to your database. I mean, you're in the Richard Robbins world, you know, you do business coaching. I know a lot of your businesses repeat and referral. So you spend a lot of time re-communicating, retargeting, and sending marketing materials to the people who have already done business with you and your circle of influence. How have you made any changes, if at all, to how you market to your database under the new set of agency disclosure rules?
Well, and you cover this with the last couple of shows because this is a very important topic. The first thing, by the way, is that video that I, you know, it's funny. I filmed a video for consumers a few weeks before June the 15th, and it was only really intended for our clients. And I had posted it on our Prime Real Estate Team Facebook page, and it ended up being shared by 85 other people, most of which were other realtors, actually. So it's an honor. You know, it was not a commercial for me. It was information about what consumers can expect. So that's one of the first things we did is we sent that to our entire database because we want them to understand the changes. We understand that, you know, they read the news, they have friends that are telling them about this. You know, as far as our regular touches with consumers, has it changed what we're doing yet? Well, one of our focuses is to reconnect with all of our clients just to tell them about this change, because I think it's another great opportunity for us to get in front of people. We're always looking for opportunities, right?
Yeah. And
here, the Real Estate Council gave us one. It's a gift, right?
Well, and you talk about the video that you created going, you know, essentially viral on social media. I mean, 80 plus shares is pretty remarkable. I mean, there's very few pieces of content we produce in a year that get shared that much. So I'm curious, have you made any changes or modifications in how you communicate via social media, whether it's what your team's posting on Instagram or Facebook? I mean, are you being more mindful of the language you use in the marketing copy? Are you using images differently? Like, any changes at all in the last 40 days, or is it basically status quo as far as you're concerned?
Basically status quo, you know, because for us, there, you know, I can't think of any content that is crossing the line, right? Apart from maybe posting a poll saying, you know, how long have you lived in your house and do you plan on moving in the next 6 months? You know, I think that's probably a little bit of a gray area, but no, I'd say otherwise, it's sort of business as usual.
You know, that's a really interesting point, because just on the car ride from Victoria to Nanaimo, I was listening to a social media marketing podcast, and they were talking about with the new Facebook algorithm, how pushing out content is going to be less favored by Facebook, whereas asking questions and starting conversations is actually going to create, you know, better, you'll show up more on the newsfeed if you can start conversations. That sort of feels like it's a bit of it at odds of what you just said. I mean, we don't want to necessarily say to someone, how long have you lived in your house? Do you see that as maybe being a line that might get crossed?
Well, I think so. I think council might think that, right?
Yeah.
You know, anytime we're getting in, because all of a sudden, you know, Bob Smith says, oh, I've been in for just a moment here. Bob Smith says, I've been in my house for 6 years and I'm thinking of selling.
Right.
You know, or the kids are out of school and it's, you know, oh, hold on a second, too much information, right?
Right. So what about those, you know, memes you see where it's like the four different style of homes and they'll say, which one do you like, the Tudor, the modern, then this or that? I mean, that potentially could be the beginning of qualifying someone.
It could, but you know what? Again, though, that's I don't think that's so much of a gray area, because it's just asking, it's a pick A, B, C, or D. I mean, how much more information are you getting from a consumer other than that at that point?
Okay, so don't be terrified is what you're saying.
I don't think so. And, you know, if somebody, I think the point is, if somebody expresses an interest in doing business with a licensee, then all we have to do is just make sure that we follow the guidelines and have a meeting, have a conversation, which incidentally starts with the disclosure of representation and trading services, right?
That's, yeah, fantastic.
And you know what? This is probably the biggest change that I have noticed recently is I was at a I was doing an evaluation at a property last Tuesday, and you know the typical sit at the dining room table, start talking. They, you know, as they open their mouth, and you know they're going to start talking about their circumstances. I hope before we go down this path, there's something that the government has made us doing. And you know what? I have taken on the attitude of doing this in a very light and humorous fashion, mm-hmm. right? So I just say, you know what? It's not us. It's the government. This is, you know, this is what's happened. This is what they're making us do. Hope you guys don't mind, but I got to go through this dialogue with you. And I promise you, once that's over with, we can have a great chat, right?
And how have people received that?
Fine. Absolutely fine. In fact, I have to tell you, June 16th, so the Saturday after the rule changed, I had a meeting at 11 o'clock with a buyer who was referred to us at her place of work. So I went to her work and I had to do, you know, we all get kind of, you know, we're not strong the first time we do something, right? But I did the whole, listen, Anna, before we begin, this just happened. And, you know, lucky you, you've won the lottery because of the fact that you're the first person that I get to talk with about this.
And this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you.
Exactly. And, you know, just very lighthearted. And we went through the disclosure, representation and trading services. And, you know, it's so funny. She's a first time buyer. She's referred to us. After going through the disclosure, she said, okay, so can we sign? I can't remember how she put it, but she basically said, can we sign a buyer agency agreement?
Wow.
And I'm like, holy cow, this is a very powerful tool because it directs us down that path and it lets the consumer feel that it's a benefit to have a contract with an agent.
We just had a comment here from Evan again in Nanaimo. He says, humor has worked for me too, balanced with the levity that is to protect the average consumer. I absolutely hear you. I mean, my take on this, the opinion I've formed in the last 90 days is that a lot of these changes are really for the benefit of the industry and the consumer. My only issue, and I don't want to go down the complaining road, is just the how it's been rolled out and not getting everyone fully trained before the rollout date. But hey, that day is long since gone, and we're having these types of conversations so we can keep leveling up our skills. I want to ask you about inbound inquiries. So we talked about online lead generation. There's the classic, hey, Tony, I'm sitting outside of your house. I see your name on the sign. So we've got sign calls, realtor.ca leads, you know, Lead Street, whatever. These inbound inquiries from strangers that you don't know. Yeah. How are you and your team handling those now going forward?
Yeah. Okay. So we've had more incoming referrals, strangely, in the last 45 days. And just to let you know, because we generally converse by text or by that's quite the close up there, Brayden.
Oh, sorry. No, it's panned over. They can't see me. They can only see you. Right now. I'm trying to read a comment from one of our viewers.
Hey, you need some glasses, there, buddy.
I do.
Yeah. So talking about connecting with people by text or by email, part of our conversation is, you know, very nice to have been introduced to you by so-and-so in whatever place. Before we begin, the British Columbia Real Estate Council requires that we send you this document. So we send them the DORTs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a process. There's a few things, you know. For instance, I have a file on my laptop that is the blank forms. So it's always ready there. I don't need to access web forms whenever I need it. So it's all there. We have pre-populated the, you know, my information, of course, right? The other thing I have to say is I have migrated recently to an iPad Pro, which I'm talking to you on right now. Because I've been taking listings with the tablet and the Apple Pencil and getting clients to actually sign right on the iPad. And the reason for that, twofold, actually. One is the disclosure of representation and trading services. I'm not keen on that app yet, you know.
Yeah. Nobody,
talked about that a lot recently, even though they changed it. But the other thing is the darn, when it gets to offers, that whole disclosure of expected remuneration.
Right. Is very clunky.
Yes, super clunky. Yeah.
No, Kayla Jenkins in our office in Oak Bay has a follow-up question talking about inbound leads. So, she's Kayla here. I'm just going to bring this on screen. She says, Tony, would you not show your listing to someone who reviewed the disclosure and chose to be an unrepresented party? So how would you, I want to ask that in twofold, because one, you are a team leader. I imagine in most cases, a buyer lead is going to go to one of the agents on your team. So I'm curious from the team leader perspective, but even if you were a solo practitioner, how would you handle that?
Yeah, great question, Kayla. And, you know, again, I'm in the middle, right? I'm not the middle, the beginning of doing an applied practice course with new licensees right now. And I'm going to say one of the chapters at the very beginning is the four Ds, right? Disclose, determine, or the biggest one there is decide, right? So we get to decide if we're going to proceed and how we're going to proceed. You know, your question, would I take somebody under unrepresented? I got to tell you, I'm scared. I'm scared of that right now. I don't really feel like being the first person that gets dragged in front of counsel for unrepresented parties. And I got to tell you, we were always really good at no agency. So
what do you mean by that?
So whenever we double-ended properties, very rarely did we do limited dual agency. We almost always did no agency with the buyer.
Right.
So I represent the seller, but and I also knew how to conduct myself with a buyer under no agency, right? Mm-hmm. Made sure that it was very clear they knew that anything they say can be used against them. You know, things aren't confidential. And I always made sure that people had the option to go find their own agent for representation, right? Why would we now want to go and show an unrepresented party our listing? I suppose the reason why you would is the hope that maybe you could convert them into a buyer if they've decided they don't like your listing, right?
Yeah. I mean, what do you think the percentages of buyers who call in on a listing and they actually buy that listing? I know, like, for me,
it's low.
This type of market where, well, I should say a year ago in the crazy seller's market that we were in, maybe that number was higher, but I think in a balanced market where the consumers, the buyers have more choice, I just don't see a lot of examples. So I can understand, you know, from Kayla's perspective or anyone who's looking at their business plan and going, listen, I used to bank on every time I would get a listing, I would get an inquiry. I would show them the property. 90% of the time they didn't like it. And I would go on and show them other properties. Do you think from a risk management standpoint, that's just not worth the investment of your time at this point in time?
I'm going to say at this point, yes. However, I'm cognizant of the fact that people who are newer in the business right now, this has taken away a significant opportunity for them to generate leads because it is usually a pretty good lead generation source. You know, the biggest concern is what happens if that person does like that house?
Right.
Because at that point, you know, again, I mentioned I don't want to do a double end based on unrepresented buyer, I would end up forwarding or referring that person off to another agent anyways, right?
Yeah. We got a comment from Mark Haslam here over in the North Shore saying, I've made a decision that I won't ever be doing unrepresented full stop, period.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. And, go, Mark. You know, and Mark is a 30-year veteran, right? I mean, it's dangerous, man. Like, I don't want to be the first person to get caught under that circumstance, right?
And of course, I still, you know, and you said it to you have empathy. I have empathy for people who are just starting out. You know, we know it's a very expensive business to get into. There's a lot of competition. So, like, if you could take yourself back, I mean, it was 1991 when you got in the business. You've obviously very much established yourself. You're very successful. But if you were to hit reset on your business and start over, if you decided to represent or unrepresented third parties, I mean, is there any tips that you would give them? I mean, copious notes, making sure you get everything signed, dated. Like, what would you say to someone who's still willing to take the risk because maybe their business isn't where yours is?
Well, okay, so I as far as the conversation is concerned, I don't think the conversation is really, are you willing to work with unrepresented buyers? I think the conversation for the new realtors is more, how do we prospect, how do we take somebody who either called in or came into an open house and then convert them into an eventual buyer, right? So there's that point of time where they have to be unrepresented, right?
Right.
And then what is the next step to turn them into an actual client? I think that's probably more of the question, right? You know, I cannot fathom anyone deciding that they're going to intentionally drive around and spend a lot of time with a consumer who will only be unrepresented, because what the hell are you going to talk about in the car, right?
The weather. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The news, right? There's it takes away the ability to build a relationship, and that's what we do, right?
Yeah.
You have to have a client relationship in order to do that.
We've got some more questions pouring in here, and I think now would be the appropriate time to mention the disclaimer that I forgot to mention at the top of the interview, which is, Tony, last I checked, you're not a managing broker.
Correct.
Neither am I. So yeah. Anyone who's watching this and is getting BG value from it,
broker.
Go and talk to your managing broker. They are going to be the most well-trained person to talk about you specifically, the context of your market. So make sure you go talk with your manager. We're just here to sort of encourage you along, give you some ideas so you can go and vet those through your manager. So there we go. We got that out of the way. I want to talk to you about team structure, because again, I promoted this particular interview from the specific perspective of you're a team leader, and that comes with some set of challenges that frankly some solo agents just don't simply have, which is designated agency. When you have, you know, I know Kyle on your team, Angie, Sue, like you have agents on your team. They may have never met the seller before, and yet they're treated as if they are representative of the seller because they're on your team.
Yeah.
How are you structuring your team any differently now than maybe you were, say, 2 months ago?
Okay. So first of all, as far as the designated agent aspect, let's not forget that has never changed. I mean, since designated agency, every single licensee on my team and myself we act as if we were one solo person, right? So that never changes. As far as the new rules and the team structure is concerned, no, we thought long and hard about this, and I know that some agents in on the mainland had decided to disband. You know, they decided to create a buyer wing and a listing agent wing. And my argument to that, though, is how can you demonstrate to the superintendent or to the courts of law that you are completely separate? Because if you've got two separate wings, you sell a seller's house and then transition them over to the buyer side, there is still, I'm thinking that it's just too close as far as the team is concerned. And it's especially worse. You know, I said it when we had our little get together just before the new rules, we put on that event, remember?
Yes, yes.
I said, you know what? If you're sharing a pillow, there's no way that you can demonstrate complete separation, right?
And you are, in fact, sharing a pillow, I believe.
I am sharing a pillow.
Except when you're on the couch.
Not with Kyle.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. Not with Kyle. Okay, well, that's an interesting perspective. And I think it also ties into what you said a few minutes ago, which is you don't want to be the first person dragged in front of council to sort of set what the new policy is going to be or how they're going to govern. I mean, no one wants to be in front of council at any given time, but we definitely don't want to be the first case. And I think there's going to be a bit of a climatizing period for teams. But one of the things that I've heard a lot from team leaders is talking about, well, what happens when I have a buyer's agent? You know, a big part of their business is predicated on leads that come in on my listings. Do you have any other further comments on that, just in terms of how your team model is structured? What have you done to maybe insulate yourself from that a little bit?
Yeah. And you know what? I think this kind of comes back to Kyla's question somewhat, right? Where we have had instances already where Angie has showed our listing, right?
Right.
But of course, it all starts with disclosure representation and trading services, and that buyer has to be unrepresented, right? And the only reason why she showed, for instance, our property in the Henderson area there is under the pretense that if they don't like the house, that they're going to convert, hopefully she can convert them into a potential buyer after the fact. So, you know, this is a really strange reality when you think about it, because I'm not sure sellers would necessarily enjoy that fact, right?
And what fact is that?
the fact that a member of our team is showing the house, not with the idea to actually sell the house. Right?
Right.
So it goes back to that conversation of, are we doing our job by actually showing the house? Well, okay, I guess the same could be said of an open house as well too, right?
Yeah.
Is that where we've gone, where that's how we get showings? Because I still believe at the end of the day that the most qualified buyers and the people who are going to eventually end up buying your listing are the ones that make an appointment with a buyer agent who qualifies them properly, has already done the disclosure of representation and training services, and is providing them professional care, right?
Absolutely. So we got another question here from Joe Squire, Vancouver Island Realtor, also a electric vehicle owner. Joe asks, what about project sales? And how does an unrepresented buyer differ from no agency transaction in terms of risk? Now, Tony, I may have missed them if you've had them. I'm not sure how much you work in projects, but I'm sure you've had them over the years. What's your take on projects from a listing agent and a team leader's point of view?
Well, okay, so that is one that we haven't put a lot of thought towards. I used to do project sales. Right now, I have a subdivision up island, and it is 16 lots. For us, you know, again, we've had to make it very clear that, you know, we've got to be careful with how we respond to leads. So, you know, okay, I've had phone calls even this weekend about that subdivision, and it's the same as before. We provide general information to people who inquire on it, but when they want to move a little bit further, including having a look at the property, we've got to introduce the disclosure, representation, and training services. How that'll work in a project, I don't know, because I feel that's going to be very clunky.
Yeah.
You know, how can you streamline the process of presenting that form, right?
Yeah, it is something that we're going to have to continue to work through. We've got a comment here from Jim Bennett, who is watching from Qualicum, beautiful Qualicum,
Jim,
right now. Now, this is an interesting one, Tony, and I might have to hit end broadcast here, because this is a question from a member of the public. And
yeah,
this
okay,
show is geared,
hold on a second. I can tell you there's a backstory here, though. Jim Bennett was previously the government relations coordinator at the Victoria Real Estate Board. So
okay.
He's not a member of the public. He may be giving us a very interesting angle or twist from a consumer standpoint. So
I will bring it up on here, but I just we have to be really cautious in terms of not providing any agency advice. So Jim Bennett.
Oh, hold on,
here.
Jim. I'm just going to send you this disclosure of representation and trading services.
Yeah, no kidding. So Jim is asking, just thinking about something here. The law does not say I have to use a realtor as a buyer. I saw a house once listed, phoned the agent as an unrepresented buyer. Love the house, all cash offer, no inspection subjects to. I wanted to deal then and there. Can I still do this without representation?
So the answer, Jim, is yes.
Okay.
Right.
Next question.
But there are some new forms. So the first one is, of course, the disclosure, representation, and trading services that outlines the difference between being a client and being unrepresented. And the second one, Jim, and by the way, we got to bring out these forms to you before you even look at the house, really. It's at the first moment that you connect with us. But the second thing is, if you decide that you want to buy that house, then we have to pull out this form that's called the risks of being an unrepresented buyer. And it's pretty clear. It says that as a licensee, nothing that you say is held in confidence. We do not owe any duty of loyalty to you, or no duty of disclosure. We must still be competent. That's important. But there's a lot of disclosures. Jim, as a consumer, the thing that you have to know is counsel has put us licensees in a very risky position with being unrepresented or providing an unrepresented buyer service. And as you're listening on this podcast right now, you're hearing that many licensees, including myself, I think it's just a very risky situation.
There you have it. Now, we got another comment here from a big fan of yours in Nanaimo, John Cooper from RE/MAX in Nanaimo. He says, Tony, in your opinion, do you think teams should have access to designated agency? What is the difference between a team and a group of agents that share an assistant or share an office and regular client sharing? It's a great question.
It is a great question, John. So I think counsel's question there will be, do you share information? So a team, of course, we know generally speaking, there's collective database, right? It would be your CRM, it would be, you know, cloud storage, all of the files of listings and sales, right? Now, I think John and I have sort of talked about this before. What if it wasn't technically a team, but just a group of agents that maybe shared an assistant, for instance? The question would be, do those people have access to private information? I mean, this is what happened when we moved to designated agency. The real estate brokerages had to make sure that everything was under lock and key. There was no shared information. I think that's an important thing to consider here, right?
That's awesome. Now, we got to be mindful of the time here. We're just beginning to reach the final stages where we have to wrap up. I'm curious. I mean, you're a pretty optimistic guy. I'm a pretty optimistic guy. We want to look for opportunities. I mean, there's that old saying, when a door closes, another opens. Where do you see the opening with these new changes in the market from a realtor's team leader's perspective?
The biggest thing really is buyer agency. Mm-hmm. And I have been saying this for months now.
Hold on, Tony. You've been saying this for years.
For years. It's true, because my first buyer agency contract was 2007. So I've been doing this for 11 years, right? And I've been going to classes and I've been espousing the virtues of buyer agency. But, you know, hey, I got guys that have taken my buyer agency course three or four times over the course of the past 10 years, and they still have not been able to implement it. Right now, the Real Estate Council has given us this gift, as I said before, where consumers are reading about this. Consumers know that it is no longer an advantage to them necessarily to go to the listing agent directly. In fact, there's huge drawbacks to doing so. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, we've got this opportunity to be able to say, we can provide you a very high level of service under contract. And it doesn't just commit you, the consumer, to being loyal, which it does, by the way, but it also commits me to a level of service that we must provide, or else you can fire us, right? So I think right now is the perfect time for all of us licensees to get very strong at buyer agency. Because we got to ask ourselves the question, why would a consumer agree to commit to us as a client at all? And the only reason why they would is if they get the impression that we're going to provide them services that they might not get from somebody else, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the perfect way to wrap this up. I mean, buyer's agency, it's something, and you said it earlier, these rule, the agency side of things hasn't changed. It's how we operate within it and the rules and when we're required to make the disclosures that has. So Tony, go ahead.
Sorry, just really quickly. I mean, aside from a lot of extra paper, and Corey Raven said 2,500 forms, right? Out of a 50 person office, extra forms. Aside from that, the fundamentals of agency have not changed at all. That has not changed. You know, the biggest change has been the fact that most people signed the Working with a Realtor form when they were getting a listing, whereas it should have happened way before when people started having a conversation. All council's done is just put us in line with what we were supposed to be doing in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I just want to ask you then, let's keep this to a tweet size reply. But if someone was thinking about starting a team, say 6 months ago, would you still encourage them to do that? You still see that there's a room for teams? The obvious answer?
Yes, most definitely. The changes here have not made teams less attractive. I mean, you think about the reasons why people have teams, you know, it's a cultural sharing. It's schedule sharing, it's support from other, that has not changed at all, just that we need to be more careful in alignment with the council rules.
Awesome. Well, Tony, I really appreciate your time and your professionalism, being willing to come on. Second time guest, air high five. That's awesome. And I'll talk to you soon, my man.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, there you go, Mr. Tony Joe from RE/MAX Camosun Oak Bay. Always a pleasure to chat with. He's got such a great point of view, whether it's coming from a team leader's perspective or from a BCRE instructor. Next week is going to be our last episode before I go on a bit of a summer break. You can probably tell I don't have a 10. It's because I'm producing content for you guys every week. So I'm going to be taking the month of August off. But next week, make sure you tune in, because I've got a bit of a fun way to end our July conversations. I'm bringing on Julian Sale from the EV motor dealer called Motorize. For those of you who follow me on social media, you probably know I've had an electric car now for over a year. Tony Joe actually has an electric car, the same model. He referred me to Julian. And we're going to be talking about whether or not it's practical to have an electric car as a realtor. You know, what are some of the basics you need to know? You know, how does charging work? You know, what are some of the best models, things like that. So if you have ever thought about getting an electric car and wonder about the practicality of it in your real estate business, make sure you check out next week's episode. That's 11:15 Tuesday next week. I'll see you there. Bye for now.